Alice, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us on the program this morning.
Great to be here.
Now, looking at the way we are seeing migration patterns here into Australia, Chinese migration patterns in particular, have we seen any particular patterns when it comes to where people are choosing to settle?
Definitely. So we've just published some research that was from across actually 7 universities. I wasn't involved in all of the research. We had about a dozen researchers from around Australia working on this. 5 independent studies, and one of them was on changing settlement patterns. And one of the key differences we have between what we might call old Chinese migrants and new Chinese migrants is the new Chinese migrants are highly skilled, they're educated, and they're more investor focused than earlier migrants. And this has resulted in some pretty big changes in somewhere like Sydney. So in Sydney, where they're settling, Chinese born residents, about a decade ago, only represented about 10% of free suburbs. So free suburbs in Sydney, about 10% of the population was China-born. A decade later, that number's increased. We now have 22 suburbs where more than 10% of the constitution of that suburb is China-born residents. Hurstville is an interesting case. It's probably the anomaly in this. There's actually over 25% of the population in somewhere like Hurstville is China-born residents. I guess the interesting thing in this, though, is the question about China-born. Like many of these Chinese residents will actually probably become Australian citizens at some point, so they'll transition into being Australian citizens, and then that will complicate how we think about these settlement patterns moving forward.
A couple of the words that jumped out to me right there, Dallas, investor-focused. And we're talking about Sydney and we're talking about properties here in Sydney. Obviously, we've got this influx of people moving into the city, but we also see almost the boogeyman of the Chinese investor and their responsibility of inflating house prices.
How much of an
impact are these migrants and these Chinese investors actually having on housing affordability?
Well, that's it. The very simple answer to that is at the level of the country, Australia, or the level of the city, like Sydney, they're having probably a marginal effect, probably a very small effect at that scale. Where they might have an effect is where there's concentrations of investment. So maybe in somewhere like Hurstville, those investors might have an effect on those property prices. The problem is we just don't have the data at that scale. We don't have the data at the scale of individual developments or neighbourhoods. We largely have the data at the scale of cities or even countries, and we know that they're having very little effect at that scale. The other thing is that these migrants some of them will stay on and become Australian citizens, some will go home. So depending on what happens to the people who buy those houses over the long term will also shape what happens in those neighbourhoods as well. So I think you're right. The foreign investment debate and linking up with housing affordability has largely been, the boogeyman in the room. And what we're trying to do with this study is put some empirical evidence around some other changes, some what's really happening in our cities that goes beyond those sensationalist claims you might hear in the news.
And looking at migration levels and, well, again, that boogeyman kind of effect, I mean, we've seen certain political parties, certain political elements here in Australia chafing at Asian migration for any number of years now. One Nation's Pauline Hanson, obviously, she was once upon a time concerned about being swamped by Asians, now has changed her target just slightly, but certainly there are still elements there chafing at the levels of migration. And it would seem the federal government right now is having some difficulty contending with the idea of the Asian century. We're still staying very close to America and not wanting to cozy up to China all that quickly. Those concentrations of communities that you mentioned there and these concentrations of investment, how is this affecting relationships between Sydney communities or indeed the sort of the traditionally Australian community and this new community of migrants?
Look, the question of trying to stop Chinese and Asian people coming to Australia goes back to the gold rush in Australia. We've got a very long history that Pauline Hanson is tapping into with trying to stop Asian people coming to Australia. We need to kind of set that up as the context for this. But we are seeing some interesting changes in terms of intercultural relations. So Asian Australians are more than twice as likely to experience racism and discrimination than other Australians in Australia. That's just the baseline. Almost 60% of Asia-born people, when they try to go and buy or rent a house in Australia, experience some form of discrimination because of their appearance. So that has profound effects on the way that they consume, buy, rent, and rent housing. We're also seeing increasing intercultural conflict inside the building. So with more, about 30% of people from China live in apartments. That's extremely high when you compare it to about 70% of Australian-born people who live in apartments. And the intercultural conflict in these high-rise apartments is growing. So things over, you know, where you leave your shoes, cooking smells, laundry being out. And I think that high-rise apartments are going to be a site of increasing intercultural conflict. And some work that's coming out of the University of New South Wales by Edgar Liu and Hazel Easthope is really doing some great work to look at those tensions and what strata managers might do to address them.
Now, as we mentioned there, Foreign Affairs Minister Maurice Payne is well set to visit Beijing this week discussing Chinese influence on politics here in Australia. Mm. Now, not necessarily the influence on politics might not be your arena, Dallas, but these larger conversations and, again, that kind of fear of cozying up a little bit too close to China, getting too close to China when it is going through this massive growth period. Mm. How does that affect relations and investment from the Chinese point of view?
So we just published a conversation piece just yesterday, and in that conversation article, we have an interview with Linda Jakobsen, who is the CEO of China Matters, and she says that Australia is in a very unique position when it comes to Asia. Unlike the US and Canada and other places, we are really geographically part of Asia, but culturally and economically, you know, part of Europe and the US. And what she argues is that we really need to take China seriously, not only as an economic and trade partner, which we already are, but also in terms of security and other things. And I think that this is a big challenge for Australians. And I think one of the big challenges for us moving forward is how we rethink our relationship in geopolitics.
Mm. Well, it's a fascinating conversation to be had. Dallas, thank you very much. Really do appreciate your time.
All right. Thanks a lot.